Minnesota, the Honorable David Gilbertson presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before it.
Good morning, and welcome to the first oral argument of the April term of court. The court has a special event this morning, and that's the official welcome of Justice Severson for his first case. And welcome, Justice Severson.
Thank you.
The first case set for oral argument this morning is the Neil Lemler Appellant versus the State of South Dakota Appellee. And for the appellant, we have Ms. Roseanne Wendell, an attorney from Pierre. And for the appellee, we have Mr. Max Gores, an assistant attorney general, also from Pierre. Ms. Wendell, you may proceed, and you have 20 minutes.
May it please the court and counsel, my name is Roseanne Wendell, and I represent Neil Lemler. On behalf of Mr. Lemler, I'd like to thank the court for giving us this opportunity to present his appeal here today before the court. Mr. Lemler appealed the circuit court's determination that he violated his probation for a felony DUI offense in Hughes County, South Dakota. He was sentenced in June of 06, and in January of 07, he was assigned to a SCRAM bracelet. He wore that bracelet throughout the time of the trial and up until the spring of the next year. In July of 2007, he was made aware that the court services was alleging that he violated conditions of his probation by consuming alcohol. We had a trial on that, and he's appealing three issues. The first one is whether Mr. Jeffrey Hawthorne, who is the co-founder of alcohol monitoring systems, should have been considered an expert in the area of the physiology of alcohol. The second issue is whether the SCRAM technology meets the Daubert standard for scientific reliability. And the third issue is whether the court erred in finding that Mr. Lemler had violated the conditions of his probation. Mr. Lemler was a 46-year-old farmer in Potter County when he was convicted of this DUI offense. In July of 07, when he was alleged to have violated his probation, it was the middle of July. Potter County farmers were preparing for the harvest there. Mr. Lemler was cleaning out his shop, emptying different items that he used in his farm work, was cleaning out fermented grain from his grain bins. It was hot, it was humid, he was working in enclosed spaces, and he worked from in the morning and at night. He wore the same clothes on a couple of different occasions, and throughout that time, he saw a number of people in the community. They were testing grain and things like that, and he saw a number of people in the community who later confirmed that they did not believe that he was consuming alcohol. Shortly after he was told that he had violated, that they were alleging that he had violated, he made a statement just in his own handwriting of his whereabouts for those couple of days just to confirm, to be able to later remember where he had been and what he had been doing. He talked to some people in the community about the same thing, turned that over to court services right away. We later made that into an affidavit and provided that to the state's attorney's office at their request because they wanted to be able to test some of the items that he was alleging that he had used during those days.
So my understanding is there was, besides the SCRAM bracelet information, there was no other evidence of him drinking. Is that correct?
That's correct. There are a number of different problems with the SCRAM technology, and we assert that the science is, the analysis of the science is fundamentally flawed.
Did he have a choice whether to accept this, or were there some rather draconian alternatives if he didn't?
Well, Your Honor, my understanding is that because he lives in rural Potter County, they do not have that 24/7 program up there. And so I assume that once the SCRAM bracelet started being used, that was probably a required condition. I don't think he did it by choice.
That or jail or something like that?
Well, you know, he'd already been sentenced to probation, so I think it was just they added it on as a condition of his probation.
Well, as a condition, then if he doesn't comply, he goes to jail, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Now, did he receive any jail time because of this violation?
He did not. In fact, at the end of the trial, even though Judge Anderson did violate him, he did comment on the record that he thought there was a chance that Mr. Lemel had not been consuming alcohol.
So he kept the probation terms exactly the same?
He did.
Is that significant for us here, that he didn't, there's no real prejudice involved here?
Your Honor, I think there's prejudice by virtue of the fact that he was violated in the first place, that he was brought back into court, was required to go through this proceeding on the science that we're claiming is not sound science. And so I think he was prejudiced by that. The problems...
Which part of the science are you saying is not well?
I'm going to get to that right now.
Okay, good.
We're not here to contend that ethyl alcohol, beverage alcohol, that's the same thing I'm going to try to call it, beverage alcohol, that we don't know what a beverage alcohol curve looks like. We do. I think that science is sound. In controlled studies where they've had people drink and they've tested it, they monitored it, there's a similar linear curve to a blood alcohol test. We're not contending that that's the science that's not accurate. What we're saying is there's lots of different kinds of alcohol. None of those kinds of alcohol have ever been tested. Research has not been done, and control testing has not been done to where they've concluded to a scientific certainty, a reliable certainty, that those kinds of alcohols would not produce the same kind of curve that a beverage alcohol curve would make. And basically the problem is that there's so many things that even AMS agrees, besides the alcohol that you can have find in the environment, that's produced internally within your system, that's absorbed into your system, or that's ingested in your system, that comes out through the skin. It all comes out through the skin. And they simply do not know, and they admit that they do not know, what kind of a curve those kinds of alcohol test, what kind of curve that would make if it was monitored under those kinds of circumstances. In addition to that, there's all kinds of interference that may come into play when it comes to some readings on the chart. Heat, water, humidity, temperature, all those types of things, according to even AMS, can affect the reading on the chart. They continually assert that they can distinguish an alcohol, a beverage alcohol curve from a non-beverage alcohol curve merely by the way the curve looks, merely by the absorption rate and the elimination rate. But there's no scientific basis for that assertion. It's never been tested. So for them to say that, according to Dr. Lestala, who was our expert, who is a professor of physiology, he said it's pure speculation because we just don't know what kinds of curves, what kind of absorption and elimination rates those other types of alcohol might have if they're ingested into your system, absorbed into your system, or internally produced.
Your expert who testified, I kind of got the sense in the brief that this person had testified in other courts on the same issue.
He has.
And have other courts determined that, have taken his testimony and determined that this mechanism is not reliable?
Justice Konenkamp, my understanding is that no appeals court has ever considered this, but there have been circuit courts, lower courts that have. I'm aware of one court that did not accept the science of the scram bracelet, but many others have.
Does it make a difference that this is a probation violation where all you have to prove is or to be reasonably satisfied as opposed to actually entering it as an element of a crime in a regular trial?
I don't think so, Justice Meyer-Henry, because either the science is reliable or it's not, and if it's not reliable, we shouldn't be using it. According to AMS, they say that a typical absorption rate for alcohol is 0.05% per hour, and an elimination rate is 0.025% per hour or below. Those are the numbers that they use when they look at a chart like this to determine whether they think a person has had a drinking event. If it goes above those rates, they automatically say it doesn't. It isn't a drinking event. The problem is that, let's look at the chart here. They look at the highest peak, and then they look at the ends, and they say, well, if that rate fits within our, what we believe is the alcohol curve, then we think it's a drinking event. In this case, Mr. Hawthorne testified as to this initial peak that they totally disregard. They completely disregard this peak. And he says, well, that's some kind of an interference. We don't know what it was. But it might have been that he dumped alcohol on his skin down by his ankle, and it made some kind of a peak like that. Even though they don't know what happened right here, and they're disregarding it as to drinking alcohol, they're disregarding it, they still start over here in order to make their curve work for them. So essentially what they're saying is, this was an interference, but he was drinking at the same time too. We think he was drinking because we're going to, even though we're saying some kind of an alcohol interferent came in here and made the chart, made the peak rise.
What did he have to say about that really big spike at the end?
I believe that's the one that he said, he was just purely speculating, but he said, well, maybe it got wet or something and did that.
Water will do that?
I think, and I can look in the testimony, Your Honor, but I think that he said maybe he was taking a shower is what he said there. But that's the problem with it.
What kind of time frame is there on that?
These are every 4 hours. These marks right here, every 4 hours.
From beginning to end, how many hours is that spike?
These two or just
this? Yes, the whole thing.
24 hours.
24 hours. Okay.
And this spike right here, it looks to me like it's maybe about 2 hours. So essentially what Mr. Hawthorne is saying is once it starts to read on the system, once there's an alert, it reads every half an hour. So if there's a two-hour period of time here, and it looks to me like it may be a three-hour, because I think there's six different points. According to Mr. Hawthorne's speculation, he would have had to dump alcohol on his leg just at the time that half an hour is coming up, because that alcohol is not going to absorb. It's just going to evaporate into the air. So in order for it to read on the scram bracelet, he would have to dump alcohol on him or whatever happened at just the right time in order for that to read on the scram bracelet.
Now, was there evidence, did the state present charts on their previous studies when they truly knew that the person was drinking and then compare that with what this one looks like?
I believe they did adjust.
What does the regular one look like then? Does it?
It's a very gradual up and then gradual down, and not all these little spikes.
Yes, it's fairly linear, which it's straight, and different people absorb and eliminate at different rates. But even if somebody drinks and then doesn't drink and then starts drinking again, that doesn't change the absorption. And so, you know, this type of peak and valley would not, it's our assertion, happen in a regular drinking event. And you're correct in the controlled studies, they're fairly straight, both absorption and the elimination.
So is the question then, how varied is acceptable scientifically from the controlled study and the even absorption rate and elimination rate? How many peaks and valleys can you have here and deviations from that control test to still be a scientifically reliable
test?
We would assert that that wouldn't even tell you the answer, Justice Meyer-Hernan, because there's all these other types of alcohol out there that have never, ever been tested as far as if they're within your system or the combination of them along with the environmental issues. We don't know what those absorption and elimination rates would be. So, I mean, that's AMS's contention, is that if it looks like a drinking alcohol event, then it is one. If it doesn't look like it is, then it isn't. But our assertion is that you can't tell that way.
Now, do they ever use these, for instance, when you see this happening, do the probation officers or anyone go check and actually determine whether they're drinking or not? Smell their breath, take a blood alcohol content, or, you know, test their blood, which you usually would do with a PBT, which seems a similar thing. You follow up to make sure. It's more of a hunch, and then you follow it up with real evidence. Is that normally how they use a SCRAM bracelet, or is this the way they normally use it?
This is the way they use it, and the reason is because the readings that are taken from the SCRAM bracelet get sent to Denver, I believe it is in Colorado, and then the next morning somebody...
So it isn't immediate.
No.
Nobody's looking at it immediately.
And that's one of the problems. This fuel cell technology that they use in the SCRAM bracelet is the same technology that's used in the breathalyzer test, which isn't admissible in court for different reasons, I think. But
Ms. Wendell, that brings us to the question I have. I understand there's no dispute that the fuel cell technology, the methodology of detecting beverage alcohol, is accepted by both of the experts in this case, correct?
Yes.
So there's no dispute that a transdermal alcohol curve for beverage alcohol has been scientifically accepted in the community.
Yes.
And so the question for us, or the question for the trial court, was whether these variables, like non-beverage alcohol, interference and other things, may it affect the known scientific methodology. Is that correct? How it may affect the result, I guess, or the conclusion.
That's right.
Okay.
I think how it would affect the conclusion, because, again, AMS says if it looks like a beverage alcohol curve, it is.
Well, then how is that different from any other scientific methodology that might be affected by variables? If the underlying methodology is accepted, in science every day we have variables that if you inject that into the methodology, the result isn't the same. The result is skewed. The result is wrong. And isn't that the purpose of the trial here, to take the known methodology produced for Judge, I believe it was Judge Anderson, mm-hmm. these possible variants, and apply those to the methodology and see whether the conclusion is valid? Isn't that the fact finder's decision?
The problem is, Justice Center, that there are so many things that there's so many variables, including the non-beverage alcohol, that are known to be able to be ingested or produced into your system that have never been tested. And so there are so many things that we don't know about how the environment and these other alcohols would affect your system that we can't rely on the behavior of that curve. And to make that point, I just want to point out, and it would show better in the chart that was the first exhibit of, this is the second page, but on the first page, Mr. Lemler had an elimination rate of alcohol per AMS's contention of 0.003% per hour. That's 8 times less than the typical elimination of alcohol. So they're saying for every hour that it would take most people to eliminate this much alcohol, it took him 8 hours. But yet they're saying we know for a scientific certainty that this was beverage alcohol. And given the fact that stated before, his outer layer of his skin was exposed. His skin was exposed because he had worn the bracelet and he had scars, blisters. That being the fact that that was not there to bar elimination, it should have eliminated faster. If it was beverage alcohol, without that outer layer of skin, it should have eliminated faster. But instead, it eliminated 8 times slower. But they're saying, well, it fits within our parameters of what we say is a beverage alcohol event. So even though it doesn't, not the typical, it's 8 times slower than the typical, we're still going to call it a beverage alcohol event. There's just so many unknowns because the science has not been studied on how all these other things affect that curve. Mr. Lemler was working with fermented grain. He was sweeping it, shoveling it within a confined space for a period of time those days. That's what beverage alcohol is made out of.
But does Dalbert require that science verify every possible variable and contingency that could affect the result?
It doesn't, but what it does require is that the theory's been tested. And when they're admitting that there's all these other factors, and those factors have never, ever been tested, I think that means that it does not meet the Dalbert standard.
Your time has expired, Ms. Wendell. Thank you. Mr. Gores, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Hey, please, counsel. My name is Max Gores. I'm an assistant attorney general, and I represent the state of South Dakota in this appeal. There's a certain risk in jumping right away to the questions you've been asking, so I don't want to waive any of the arguments that I've made in my brief if I don't get to them, because I'm going to go directly to some of the things that you've asked. The first one is this thing about other alcohol. If other alcohol is ingested into a system, it will have the same effect on a PBT, a breathalyzer, or even a blood test. Because if you remember from other evidence in other cases, the state lab's blood testing machine is just a giant breathalyzer. They take blood, blow it into a headspace in the form of an aerosol, and test the air to see what the content is. So if there's isopropyl alcohol or methyl alcohol or some other kind of alcohol in your blood, you get the same problem with a blood test or a breath test or a PBT.
Well, some of that's going to kill you if you drink it.
Well, it'll make you blind at least.
Okay. A little different than here where they're alleging it was spilled on the leg or something in the area of it, doesn't it?
I understand. Nevertheless, people do ingest some of those alcohols in small amounts, and it's possible that they could show up on a breathalyzer or a blood test. Now, I asked for permission and received...
But it really is different, though, because ingesting is against the law. But having, when you're working in a grain bin, as he's alleging, and you're exposed to it, that's a little different than purposely ingesting it for our purposes.
If you become intoxicated from alcohol, I'm not sure it matters how you get it in your system. I don't think it matters whether you drink it or eat it or take it as a suppository. It's still alcohol and you're still intoxicated. And the purpose of this is to have total abstinence from alcohol.
Isn't the real question, though, not the bracelet scientific basis for the transdural alcohol detection? Isn't the issue the curve and the scientific basis for the curve? And as I understand, there's only one test with 44 participants, and that's the whole basis for the curve? Is that what I understood from the record?
That's not my understanding. This has been tested in the field. They have run over 12 million tests.
Well, have there been published scientific studies, peer-reviewed studies on the curve and the shape of the curve and what it detects?
Wojcik and Hawthorne wrote an article on this, and it was peer-reviewed. As a matter of fact, Mr. Estawa.
Was that the one with only 44 participants? That was the whole norm, was 44 people?
But they do continuous testing to refine their possibilities. The article referred to the 44. But they've done other testing, and he testified to that. I'd like to take just a short portion of the testimony that explains this up and down in the curve. I'm on page 81 of the record, and the question is, let's talk about why it doesn't have a curve like you show with the red dotted line. Answer, this is Hawthorne testifying. The red dotted line would be if this was an ideal world and we had absolute uniformity in the fit and they weren't moving around, we would get a nice smooth curve. But since this is a device that's worn on the leg, we do get a lot of motion. We do get a lot of variation in the readings, so we're not going to get nice smooth curves. If the subject had been sitting in a chair with the foot up and didn't move for the time period, would you maybe see something closer to that? Answer, yes. This is part of the alcohol curve here. The counsel for Mr. Lemler.
All right, let me stop for just a second. Ms. Wendell, do you want to go up there so you can see what he's referring to? Okay, go ahead.
This is the interferent that Mr. Hawthorne testified about over here on this side. But let me explain to you how they looked at this and verified that this was alcohol. All right? The first thing is that if anything is below 0.02, they throw it up. So you see now, here's one over here that's just a little bit over. That's one of the reported ones, and this one is too. But anything below 0.02, so they immediately take off the low ones. Then it has to start at zero, and it has to end at zero. And it has to reach a peak. After it reaches a peak and there's zero on both ends, then they look at the absorption and elimination rates. Now, the absorption rate that they apply is 0.05%. And you can see the absorption rate is within the 0.05% all the way along here. There are two rates on the elimination rate. And I think counsel misstated the record. If it's not below, if it's above 0.003, then they throw it out. If it's below 0.003, and it has to be above 0.025. So it has to be in this triangle. Now you can see the red dotted line is. And in fact, Mr. Lemler's was 0.011, not 0.003. And from prior cases and from the testimony, the average rate is 0.015, which isn't far off of the 0.011 that's on the chart. There are some people that eliminate faster. One case was referred to in the testimony of a man that eliminated at 0.036. Had a high metabolism, he was a long-time drinker. So, those are several of the things. In addition to that, if they have something here that looks odd, they'll contact the service provider and have them go out and interview the person involved and see what the deal was, if there was some kind of interference. And they have a review committee that goes through these. They have it calibrated. They calibrate the bracelet before they put it on. And it has self-diagnostic checks. Every hour, it checks its memory, its straps, its pump, its relays, the infrared sensors, and the temperature sensors. And that internal test is checked every day. And then these are read every day. And they preserve this data.
Mr. Gores, though, the question here, at least the question raised by the appellant, is curves with interference and other variables.
Okay.
Her point is, as I understand it, that there's, she alleges there's no scientific, accepted scientific, I shouldn't say accepted, but Dalbert qualified scientific evidence on curves that have interference.
But she has to prove it's not alcohol. I have to prove that it is. Now, to answer the question more directly, Mr. Hawthorne talked about interference. They have a very fast up and a very fast down, and you can see they wouldn't fit within this curve or within this curve. An interferent can be anything from water to other alcohol, to a business card you stick between your leg and the bracelet, and other things like that. Mr. Lemler said that he thought there were two interferents, John Deere graphite lubricant and John Deere starting fluid. And Mr. Hawthorne tested both of them. He tested them separately, and he tested them together.
All right, but when he tested them just by spraying them on the unit. There was no absorption type testing, was there?
Well, I would hope not, because the propellants and starting fluid, as the Chief Justice pointed out, would probably kill you.
Well, that's what the proponent is saying. If he's working out in the shed, and a certain amount of that is absorbed into your skin. Is there any kind of testing on how much of what the effect of those interference would do if there's some absorption into the skin and what it would do to the unit?
Again, the only testing that was done in this case with regard to those possible interference was to spray it either on the pant leg and leave it on all day. I think it was 6 hours, not all day, and see if it would show up. They didn't put it in anybody's system.
All right. Has there been any scientific testing on what the absorption of interference would do to the curves?
I'm not aware of any.
There was no evidence of that.
No. Scram bracelets are part of the public policy of the state of South Dakota. The public policy of the state is to substitute abstinence from alcohol for incarceration. And this is to keep people out, to keep them working, and to keep them from drinking and being a risk to public safety. Now, the traditional thing is you go in and blow twice a day in the PBT at the sheriff's office because it isn't practical to have two blood tests a day. But the Scram bracelet is a good alternative, because it allows you not to have to make that 50 or 100-mile trip to some place where they can do a PBT testing if you're a farmer out in the country or if you live way out in rural South Dakota. And so the Scram bracelets are used for that.
Are they widely used in the state? Is that in the record?
I can tell you there are 582 Scram bracelets out now, plus parole has 50.
Okay.
It's not in the record.
Are they used post-conviction, normally
both,
like we have here?
They're used both for pretrial, for post-conviction probation with the courts, and post-incarceration, either with the courts, you go to jail for a while and then you go on probation, or with us down at the penitentiary, where some guy's in for a while and then he's out on parole and they use them. They're also usable for, under the law, where people in child placement situations have to maintain absolute abstinence from alcohol. There's two important things to remember here. We're not trying to prove how much Mr. Lemler had to drink, just that he was drinking. Because total abstinence is the first criteria.
All right, the standard we're dealing with is a very low standard, obviously, if reasonably satisfied.
Yes.
The question is whether or not, in itself, this is scientific enough that, and I'm not talking about the bracelet, I'm talking about the curve. Is that, in itself, sufficient to satisfy that, or is it, regardless of what the policy of the state of monitoring people, I understand that, but our test is whether or not the trial court could, just on this technology, be reasonably satisfied.
I think so. And there's a piece of evidence in here about false positives and false negatives. The false positive rate is 0.012%, which is 12 out of 10,000.
The false positive.
That's if you haven't been drinking and it shows you have. 12 out of 10,000. Now, the false negative, if you've been drinking and it doesn't show it, is 690 out of 10,000. The state lab rate is 1%, 100 out of 10,000. So this is significantly less than the false positive rate that you get up at the state lab with a blood test. Theirs is 100 out of 10,000 compared to 12 out of 10,000. And I think that's good enough for reasonable satisfaction. If you compare this to some of the other things we use, the PBT can be wrong. That can happen. You can have the gaze nystagmus test is a very subjective medical analysis that has incredible numbers of variables, such as vision problems, brain problems, diabetes, different things like that. And yet it's allowed to be used for the purpose of probable cause. You see? And that's enough. And here, we're not talking about guilt or innocence. We're talking about whether this shows total abstinence or that it's that the man isn't totally abstinent. And we give him the benefit of the doubt at 0.02. This guy was clear up at 0.067 transdermal alcohol content. The testimony is that that is lags below and behind actual blood alcohol.
What's 0.02, like one drink?
I'm sorry?
Well, 0.02. Where
0.02 is
one drink?
In the normal parlance, I think one drink, one beer.
Okay.
All right? So to get a blood alcohol that would be even higher than this would, of course, require a certain considerable amount of drinking.
First beer is free.
So to speak, the tolerance. Plus, we also know that people don't always ingest alcohol at an even rate. This starts out at in the morning about 10 o'clock. And it goes up like this, and then it comes down, and here we are at 357 when we're at the low, and then it goes back up in the evening, and it goes clear down eventually to about 1:30 in the morning. So it's taken in at a, I don't know if you'd call it typical rate, but you might drink some, have supper, take a nap, and then drink some more.
But the state concedes that last sharp spike is not a consumption of alcohol.
No, this is clearly an interference. If you look over at this chart, this was one that was reported also, just barely over 0.02. This is clearly an interference here.
Is that last spike?
Yeah, quick up and down, it's an interference. Yes, sir.
Is that last spike just one reading, or is it more than one reading? They're every 30 minutes.
This is two readings here. It starts here and goes down here.
But this, so there must be two. Okay, so the top spike is the second reading, the top of the peak. Okay.
Yes.
Well, that's really only one reading, then, isn't it?
Well, it starts over here, then there's one here. And it should be an hour, I would think, because it's half an hour, half an hour, half an hour. So whenever you have something over 0.02, it kicks into every half hour instead of every hour.
The top spike is really only one reading, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. And the same thing's true over here. You can see here's a reading, then there's a spike reading, and then there would be a reading here, except then there's something else over there. It doesn't have to be exact science. Science isn't exact. It has to be good enough to reasonably satisfy the court or the parole board that the person has not been totally abstinent. That's all we've got to do here. We don't have to prove that he was drunk beyond a reasonable doubt. Not even by clear and convincing evidence or by a preponderance of the evidence. Reasonable satisfaction, according to State versus Berkman, is the lowest standard of proof in the courts. And I think the state has established it in this case.
Is that a finding of fact?
Yes.
So it has to be clearly erroneous.
It would have to be clearly erroneous or an error as a matter of law if the judge applied the wrong standard, but he didn't. And the judge found, as a matter of fact, that he had consumed alcohol. There are extensive findings that are in the record. Again, I don't want to waive any of my arguments, but unless there are more questions, I'm going to conclude my argument. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gores. Ms. Wendell, you have 10 minutes.
Thank you. I'd like to address some of the issues that Mr. Gores addressed. He discussed the fuel cell technology and compared it to when you take a blood test to the lab. That is not fuel cell technology when they test blood at the lab. It is at the breathalyzer, which is why that's not admissible in court. But when they take it to the lab, it's tested for ethyl alcohol only. And so the other issue regarding that is if he ingested grain dust, that's not going to make him drunk. At least there's no evidence that it would. It doesn't have all the ingredients that drinking alcohol has. And it may, you know, I guess I'm just speculating here, but if it was ingested, get on his skin, different, you know, he's dealing with it during the day, I don't know that he'd necessarily, you know, be committing a violation of his probation.
What about the argument, though, that these variables and interference do get into the blood, so they are in the blood testing system as well as the transdermal?
I don't know that that's accurate, Justice Center. The PBT, that's probably correct, but I don't know that that's accurate when they do an actual blood test. There is technology out there that can make the testing specific to ethyl alcohol. Fuel cell technology just isn't one of them.
When you said breathalyzer is not admissible in court, are you saying that it can't be admissible for any standard, or just to prove beyond a reasonable doubt? Can it be used for proving probation violation where the standard is reasonably satisfied?
You know, I guess I don't know the answer to that exactly, but my belief is that if somebody on probation violates by the breathalyzer test showing a positive reading, they probably have a blood test done then to confirm it. Although, you know, for probable cause determinations, I think a breathalyzer is appropriate. Mr. Gore said that, just because the curve doesn't look exactly like a linear alcohol consumption curve, a beverage alcohol consumption curve, doesn't mean that it's not. And our assertion is, doesn't it have to have some similarity? Doesn't it have to be some similarity? And truly, in these, there's three different charts of Mr. Lemon's that were entered into evidence. They're all over the place. And when I was speaking of the 0.003 elimination, that was on chart number one. This is chart number two. That was elimination on chart number one. But the other issue with that is that either if he was consuming alcohol, drink beverage alcohol, the assumption would be that he would absorb it and eliminate it at similar rates on three different occasions. And in looking at these charts, there's none of them that are similar. He absorbs it anywhere from 0.015, 0.007, and 0.005, and he eliminates it 0.003, 0.11, and 0.005. Those are completely different absorption and elimination rates. There's no consistency in these charts.
What was your expert's explanation for that?
He says the way they analyze this data is wishful thinking scientifically. He just doesn't think there's enough information out there. There hasn't been enough research done to confirm anything regarding how AMS analyzes these charts. And Justice Stevenson, you hit on exactly the problem with that science, with the science, and that is all the other things that can come into play have not been tested as to how they affect a reading and how the blood alcohol curve is affected by all these other factors, and that's exactly what we're saying. And while, you know, Mr. Gore's put this 0.02% line there, they start their analysis by using this initial alcohol, what they're saying is an alcohol consumption line, but they're calling it an interferon at the same time. So, and here, look at that sharp spike. They're not calling that an interferent, but it certainly doesn't. That's much higher, it would appear, than the accepted rate of alcohol absorption. So there's just nothing similar between a linear curve that we know is an alcohol curve and these readings on this chart. There's nothing similar about them. The issue is whether the theory and technique have been tested, whether or not there's a scientific basis through peer-reviewed studies, research, peer-reviewed studies published in scientific and scientific journals as to this technology. The only part of this that's scientifically tested and accepted within the scientific community is the alcohol curve of known controlled studies. We do know, you know, Mr. Gores was talking about the error rate. That error rate's done when there's controlled studies. They know people are drinking alcohol. They know how much they're drinking. And in those kind of studies, you know, I would agree, there's a low error rating. But that doesn't take into consideration people who are, you know, doing farm work and things like that. The error rate for those kind of things is unknown because there's been no research and testing done. So, you know, that the bottom line for Mr. Lemler is that the Daubert standard has not been met as to the testing of the technique used to analyze this data. The other issues that we brought up with in the appeal, which I don't want to waive either, is Mr. Hawthorne's acceptance as an expert. Mr. Hawthorne is an engineer with some business classes in a master's program. He helped develop the hardware for the SCRAM bracelet, but he's not a scientist. And it's our position that that's why the expert testimony was so diverse, is because Mr. Hawthorne's understanding of the science is limited, and Dr. Hostala's is not. Dr. Hostala's been involved in hundreds of research studies on the physiology of alcohol, and he understands the problems with this, and Mr. Hawthorne does not. The other issue is, just very briefly, we had fact witnesses that testified. You know, all of them had known Neil for a long time and had seen him drinking and testified that they were around him. They worked together in those days and saw him at the grain elevator, those kinds of things, and that he was not drinking. On the day that he was called in to the sheriff's office, I'm not sure if that's the chart. Yeah, this is the very end here. This is the day he was called into the sheriff's office to pick up his bench warrant. In their analysis of this chart, they ignore this peak right here, which is the highest peak that we can see. There might be another higher one over there. But they totally ignore this. It's on chart 3 in the briefs. But they ignore this and say that he was drinking this day. And the very first alert was about 4 o'clock that afternoon. And that was around the time that Mr. Lemler was in the sheriff's office. If you want to take this peak at 5 o'clock and look back 3 hours, which is 2 to 3 hours is what they say the absorption rate takes, then he was definitely in the sheriff's office during that time. So either they're asserting this is an interferent. But, you know, our position is either he was in the sheriff's office drinking or he started drinking alcohol immediately after he was served with a bench warrant for violation of his probation and released. And just from a standpoint of what makes sense, you know, that doesn't make any sense. And we're asserting that that's not what happened. So for all of those reasons, we ask that you reverse the trial court's conclusion that the SCRAM science is scientifically accepted and reliable, that Mr. Hawthorne is an expert, and that Mr. Neil Lemler violated the conditions of his probation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wendell. Court will be in recess for 10 minutes.